Good afternoon from the East Coast and to all other places in the world. This is Lena Live, and my great pleasure is to actually introduce my guest, which hopefully will join me because I strongly believe it's just some technical difficulties. But I was very much looking forward to have this guest, particularly because the personality of this lady is very special. She is extremely honest with her work. She has tremendous integrity and devotion to the humanity. Her name is Mary Ann Weidlin. And I would say that her total devotion has to do with us, human beings, with everyday moments of indecision, difficulties. She is very profoundly involved in her research with human behaviors, and she does certainly introduce us a lot of important points which has to do with coping strategies, which has to do with self-preservation in critical situations. She also very clear in idea of self-protection. She is dealing very deeply with issue which she calls not good enough. And just to give another dimension of her thinking and her accomplishments on the psychology area and human behavior, she is dealing with the issue of betrayal. And even though those issues are incredibly common, but commonality does not take this sharp edge of incredible struggle and everyday challenges we have as humans. She certainly demonstrated a tremendous devotion to those critical issues. And what's particularly special about her is the fact that living her own life with a great harmony with her own work makes it very real, makes it very truthful, not only believable, but very impressive. I frankly felt when I was reading some of her work that I met someone in a cafe, and with this meeting, I think I met Mary Ann on the air, because I think she just joined us, and if that's the case, I will certainly welcome her and ask Mary Ann if you're with us.
I sure am.
Oh,
can you hear me?
I hear you so well.
Good.
And I just wanted to tell you that we had a little beginning, and I certainly introduced you in your accomplishments. But if you permit me, I'd like to introduce my personal feeling, which I developed as a process of reading your extremely substantial and profound work. I felt that I met a very special person in a cafe, a very lovely looking woman, and then somehow we started to talk. Somehow we started to talk firstly about just little pleasant things, but then I sense the substance of this lady, and we really, before we knew, we really dipped into very important human issues. So we spent this wonderful conversation, and I was so inspired that I thought we will continue this conversation on the air. So Mary Ann is with us, and I have to say, Mary Ann, that I did introduce some of your credentials. I said some of your credentials, because they are so numerous and they're so impressive that certainly one introduction will have just a little touch of it. But I'd like to introduce you as my wonderful conversationalist in this cafe. So let's create a little bit of radio cafe, and I will give you an opportunity Just talk about yourself, about your work, and then perhaps we will orient ourselves in some separate issues like not good enough, ideas of betrayal, and if we will be inspired, we will go further on some qualities which you're describing. So welcome to our Air Cafe, Marianne. We like to know a little bit more about your work from yourself.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here. There was a little bit of an internet or a telephone glitch, and so it took me a little bit to get on, but here I am. Glad to be here with you. I'm glad the sun is shining because we're sitting in the outdoor part of this cafe, and it's beautiful and quiet, and I'm so glad to meet you. So give me a question. Be real specific. It's hard for me to know when somebody asks a question as broad as you did. Where do I go with that?
Oh, that is a wonderful answer you gave me, because we are in such a broad world, and I cannot imagine more relevant issues which you are talking about. And please help me with this concept. We are interconnected with everything. If, for example, we're happy with certain things, we like to take this energy and to use this positive, wonderful inspiration to some corners of our life which perhaps has some sadness. So let's start with this very positive, energetic thought. And the specific question is how we can help ourselves, what kind of method or approach we can use using our great, strong qualities and to help ourselves not feeling this concept too much of not good enough. What is the recipe? If I try, if I thrived, and I still do not feel good enough.
Well, I'm going to give you one ingredient in the recipe, because I have found in the 26 years that I've worked with people, helping them to create change for themselves, giving people one new idea at a time is best, because then they can try that and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it so that they can actually experience some success with it. So I think most importantly with the inaccurate but unfortunately repeated perception of not good enough, the best way to change that is to realize it really isn't true. It just isn't true. Perhaps when I'm just going to say the word you, and not speaking about you in particular, Lena, but I'll just use the word you because it's easier.
I do not mind. I'm sorry interrupting you. I do not mind to learn. Please point your finger. Okay. I respect you.
Okay, great.
Please.
So what I would say is that if you deal with the feeling of not being good enough and you actually say to yourself regularly, repeatedly, I'm not good enough. I never was good enough. I always do things wrong. I never do anything right. I never know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing. I can't do it. That's a typical not good enough monologue. Now, the reason that exists in the minds of so many people is that when they were growing up, they were judged by harsh critics. Maybe it was a parent, one or two parents. Maybe they couldn't live up to the successes of the parents, or they couldn't live up to the successes of an older sibling. And they felt discounted, insulted, negated, denied. And maybe they even heard someone say, you're not good enough. You're not doing it good enough. You can do it better. Why did you get a B? You should have gotten an A. I expect better of you. Why can't you give me better? Go back and do it again. They grow up with those kinds of experiences happening repeatedly enough that they begin to think that about themselves, because they are, after all, children. And children assume that adults know what they're talking about. And unfortunately, as we begin to mature, we realize that sometimes they do know what they're talking about. Sometimes we adults do know what we're talking about. But we're all stumbling around here together in truth. and sometimes children actually know more than adults do. What I think is the most important thing to realize about not good enough is that it isn't true. It's just a habitual thought pattern and perception about yourself. And when you're triggered and you're getting criticized, or you're starting a new project, or you're going back to another project that you put aside because you got too afraid to finish it, and you're starting over again and you're starting to feel not good enough, that's when you can begin to change. Do not think those thoughts. Stop. The best way to stop yourself, there's two ways. Deep breathing, obviously, full deep breathing, so that you expand rather than contract and shut down. So you expand. You give your brain some good oxygen. And number two, smile love into your heart. Very particularly into your heart, not just smile love, or not just smile, but smile love specifically into your heart and also your solar plexus to help expand and widen and broaden that chakra that the solar plexus is, and also send that energy into your heart so that your heart is open and you can begin to feel, of course, that's not true. I'm good enough. I've done a lot of good enough things. As a matter of fact, I'm a very high achiever, and I do very well on most things. But yeah, it's true. Unfortunately, I feel afraid every time I start something new. Maybe actually I am good enough, but maybe I stop because I'm repeating the thought that I'm not good enough. And so smile and think something positive. Breathe, smile, think something positive. An alternative to I'm not good enough. An alternative could be, I always know. I always ultimately know what I'm doing. I always ultimately do a good job. Sometimes I do make mistakes, but for the most part, I do just fine. And as a matter of fact, if I'm unsure, I can always ask somebody. I can always ask my friend so-and-so. She loves to be there to be supportive of me because I give her so much. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you see, what I'm saying now are all positive statements. You don't want to lie to yourself, but you do want to find the positive things about yourself that remind yourself that you are good enough, so that you can literally talk yourself out of, smile yourself out of, breathe yourself out of, and most importantly, talk yourself out of feeling not good enough and repeating those devastating thoughts. Does that help?
It helps certainly to bake very warm thought. I believe that there is a union between pure physiological reinforcement, which indeed can help mental one, because what you mentioned is well known, obviously, very profound process of breathing. Of course, we know about meditation. My question is, in your experience, how one can help himself or herself first physiologically, and not to get discouraged that mental message cannot be yet self-convincing, but indeed beginning to realize this physiological breathing, relaxation, contemplation, visualization, and how that can produce actually a rebirth of your conscious and eventually subconscious?
Well, you have to make it simple. You have to make it very simple. Take one point at a time. You know, if you're feeling concerned, actually, do me a favor if you would. Make that very long question into one very short, simple one, so I can model for our listeners exactly how to simplify their own solutions for themselves.
Okay.
Make that a simple question. Thank you.
Yes. Physiological and mental, two processes, how one is nourishing another.
Well, the fact is they all affect each other. Excuse me. Perception and thought affect emotions and energy. the health of the body affects our energy and our emotions and our thoughts. If we are vibrating at a lower frequency, such as depression, say, the body is going to be not functioning very well. It slows down the body processes. If we raise our vibrational frequency, which you do by smiling joy or love into your heart and by breathing, if you raise your vibrational frequency, you raise the quality of your brain output. In other words, your thoughts and perceptions raise qualitatively. And if you lower your vibrational frequency, your thoughts and your perceptions and such lower qualitatively. So if you're in the middle of thinking, I'm not good enough, blah, 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 and you're tight, your solar plexus is tight, you're shutting down, you've lowered your vibrational frequency, but by smiling into your solar plexus and your heart, you're raising your vibrational frequency and therefore the quality of your brain output, the quality of your thoughts.
Well,
did that help?
Yes, it does. And I'm actually jumping into to the next point, and I will try to keep it short and clear, even though everything is connected when we are thinking about things and we are really experiencing certain things which we're not aware. That brings a question, which in one of your points in your writing, it's a self-evaluation. Would you agree that, I hate word technique, but self-awareness to make this self-evaluation on the moment? Why I'm so angry? What hurts the most? Are those points of self-evaluation can help on the moment?
Absolutely. I would ask one question at a time. The brain can think, can focus on no more than two thoughts at a time effectively. Maybe three, but then it's not being very effective.
I know my problems. Okay.
If you're wanting to get the best results, then think one point at a time. So it would be, why am I being angry at myself? Let's try that one. My suggestion is to know how to get the best answer for that is do that, ask that question in a situation in which you can be quiet and close your eyes and then slow down, focus on your breathing a little bit, slow down and ask yourself, why am I feeling so angry? And don't try to get the answer from your brain, so to speak. Feel it in your body. That you can feel the anger in your body. Your brain doesn't feel so angry, but your body feels angry. And so feel the energy in your body, ask the question, and take a little bit of time until you can feel into what happened that caused you to feel that anger. You don't want to do it when you're driving the car unless you're very self-aware, for example. Do it when it counts. Go be somewhere where you can be quiet and go within and ask and be very patient and wait for the response.
I do not want to simplify this process because there is no room for simplification. But would you agree, just to relate what you said, that starts it first when you feel quiet, when you feel concentrated, when there is a good opportunity, but then bring this up as a habit. For example, if something on a moment urgency irritates you and you know you have to have a self-control and you know you cannot fall apart, and I'm going to the extreme of the situation, but if one will get to this self-mastery and will be able to evaluate himself or herself, would it be somewhat an automatic reaction to your own greatest benefit? And this way, you will be more adequate to those irritants which are from the outside?
Well, most importantly, if you are ingraining a new habit, a new way of doing something, over a negative one, you've got to repeat the new one enough times, and it's different for everybody. Some people say it's 3 weeks, some say it's 20 times. It's different for everybody, that I promise you. But you have to ingrain it enough times, do it, repeat it enough times, so that the old way doesn't get activated anymore. Everything we know is retained on a neural pathway in the brain. Everything we know, everything we remember, et cetera, it's retained on a neural pathway in the brain. And what you're wanting to do is to create a new neural pathway for that response, a positive one to replace the negative one. You have to repeat it again and again and again. Now, you don't want to start trying to do that when you're in the middle of a very important board meeting. I'm not saying if you're in a board meeting, just go ahead and get angry. I'm not suggesting that. But to develop a new response, practice it. When you're not in important situations, practice it a lot when you're in situations where you can take a moment to make the shift.
I like to take a moment and to make our usual traditional shift in my radio programs and have some music for us, which hopefully will give Marianne some rest, and I will collect my thoughts. And after a few moments, we will come back to my very special guest, my, I would say, new friend whom I met at a cafe, Marianne, and we will continue profit from her knowledge and her beautiful humanity, which we already experienced.
Thank you.
And we are back with my special guest, Marianne Weidland, and we will continue our conversation after I will excuse myself and say that the title of the music, which we just heard, is Meditation, and it was chosen for the purpose because of the nature of our conversation. I felt it, that words are swimming into the music, especially when Marianne was describing so clearly the process of our physiological recognition, I would say, to our mental realization and reprogramming us from negative and some heavy thoughts to more positive, productive, and certainly helpful thoughts. I would say that as a foreigner, I certainly aware of my accent, and Marianne was aware of that too, but she was very gracious about this, and therefore I was able to communicate with her in absolutely free, unrestricted way. And therefore, before I will ask her next question, I just wanted to comment on her very elegant writing, especially as a foreigner. I could not stop admiring her beautiful language. For example, when she says that an ardent reverence for integrity, that is a very profound thought. But just like in music, you can express different feelings with a different quality of music, and therefore you're creating so much deeper impression. So I just wanted to thank her for this incredible eloquence and skillfulness to express herself, which leads to my next question. How much of your work and your personal life really correlating to each other?
It's all the same.
Wow.
It's all the same. When I was 8 years old, back in 1952, I asked the question of my mother one day, what is the matter here? What is the matter with these people? What happened to them? Because I had never seen love in my life ever. I saw people being very different than loving and caring. And it concerned me. And that was at the age of 8. And then when I was 24, I woke up one day and realized I was one of those people. And that was 42 years ago. And I made it every atom in my body. It was one of those epiphanies. It's not just a decision. It was a full-bodied, I've got to change. One of those moments. And I knew I had to change everything about myself and my life. I also knew I didn't have a clue how to do it. None of us did back then. Those of us who were waking up and ready for change, we didn't know how we were going to do it. We only knew that there was this profound drive coming through us, insisting its way through us. And many of us are still living on that same drive now, living from the energy of that same drive now, and I'm certainly one of them. But in 1989, I certainly had changed by then, but not even remotely enough. And that's when I realized I had been self-employed, I don't know, was it 5 or 6 years or something? At that point, I'd been helping people to be successfully self-employed. So I was helping people make change, and I knew enough about change and about people in general that I realized if I teach what I want to develop within myself, that I will be supported and inspired and empowered to develop what I'm teaching. And so I decided to go into the work of self-mastery. And then in a few years, I added on peak performance. They're similar. And I've been doing that for 21 years. And choosing to facilitate others, to support others to develop self-mastery, I think was the smartest thing I ever did, because it truly has worked. I have to live my words. I have to walk my talk. if I don't, there's a discrepancy between how I am behaving and how I know myself to be and how I'm acting like I am. And that's lacking that integrity that you mentioned earlier. And for me, that's not acceptable. I have to live my words. Otherwise, I shouldn't be saying them. And so it's been awesome, absolutely awesome for me to be doing the work that I'm doing for 21 years because I have inspired myself and I have learned more from my clients than I can even possibly, I couldn't even begin to list what I know from having worked with them. And here I am. And I feel good. I feel great. And well, I don't think very many negative thoughts anymore. As a matter of fact, almost none at all. Because I have stopped it. I have not allowed it. And I've stayed with it for years. And it works. So my brain is a primarily positive organ for creation. Kind of computer for creation. Vessel for creation. And certainly getting up every day and living through each day and going to sleep each night and waking up in the middle of the night, as a matter of fact. All of those times, every single day, are way, way more pleasurable for me than they ever were when my mind was running rampant with, you know, from the conditioning that I started out with.
You're actually creating your own independence because you do not really need to have this shield or to have this wall of semi-preservation because world is so tough. You are extremely content and therefore very powerful to meet anything which is indeed in the world. You are part of the world with your own profound rights. Did I get it right?
You use very different words than I do, but I loved hearing you say it because, yes, absolutely, that's true. We just have a different way of saying it, and I love your interpretation. And back in 1968, when I declared that I was going to change, very soon after that, I became one of the many people at that time that was an advocate for peace, love, and freedom. And I've got the peace and I've got the love, and I'm close to feeling free because I'm free from the menacing effect of my own dysfunctional mind.
Well, can I share something with you? By now you get used to my way of thinking and my curves. I like to
share
with you my curves, my mind curves, my unexpected twists.
Yes.
So I will take advantage of that. But basically, I wanted to share with you one concept I came to teaching for many, many years, dealing with a performing artist, and of course, stage fright. It's like a disease, you know, it's like a virus. In fact, there is sometimes disproportional moment. The more person is talented, the more she or he needs and wants to express, the more nervous they become. So after a number of years studying this and being a performer at my own modest rites, I came to the conclusion that the real reason for this nervousness is not only ego, but it is also misunderstanding of our meanings as a human being, because our life is a performance. Because the fact that we are so unique and every moment is so different, like it takes in a performance, it is a performance of every minute. And that's the most fundamental thing. So when we do have some moments of giving speech or performing, these are the moments. They're memorable, they're important. And sometimes we're nervous because our income depends upon that, unfortunately. But coming back to my point, the life is the most wonderful performance. And whatever takes place in life, just episodes of this, I felt that in a number of cases, it did help my students to cut down their nerves.
And what did?
What I said, that this concept, once they felt that indeed the performance which they supposed to give is just as an episode of their lives, but their life is much more important, much more profound, that realization gave them much, much less nervousness and more calm, more harmony, and more freedom of expression as a consequence of it.
That's absolutely right. And I'll tell you, you've given us, myself and your listeners, an opportunity to hear that those people are very likely running thoughts about, I'm not going to do it right, and I'm going to get laughed at, I'm afraid I'm going to make a mistake, I'm going to drop my line, blah, blah, blah. Not good enough again.
Exactly right. Not good enough. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about this childhood roots, because all of this indeed comes from childhood, and it's a huge challenge to reevaluate our childhood connections. It came to my mind. It's a funny story, but at that time it wasn't very funny. I hate to tell you how many years ago, but I remember that one time, my school friend stole a little bit of a piece of chalk from another room. Now, she didn't realize that she stole it. She just thought that there's chalk available. She didn't ask permission from another teacher, and she just brought this to the classroom. So our teacher was absolutely devastated. So she said that everyone will be punished because this is like one for all and all for one. She insisted on us to write the phrase that our friend stole a piece of chalk and we feel very much guilty and we're ashamed of it. And she asked us to write this about 20 times. The only benefit I got that after so many, many years, I'm already in another country, I still remember this. That proves your point that unfortunately our childhood is not very friendly to our adulthood.
No, we're not. We're taught what to think and what not to think, and some people are taught how to follow directions. Many are not. But we are not encouraged, at least this is the way it used to be. It's changing now, but we aren't encouraged to think for ourselves. And that's a mistake, because then we reach our adult lives and we're dysfunctional.
We're dysfunctional.
We're just dysfunctional, and yet we're expected to succeed. And that's the paradox. How can we succeed if we don't know ourselves at all? If all we are is a jumble of reaction to the adults around us and the other children.
I'm jumping in because you brought something very sensitive in my observation. This idea of having success look, to have that standard of success behavior, I found this so difficult to comprehend, especially for young children, because they learn how to learn behavior existing before they even have a chance to form as a young adult. So when I was reading about you, again coming back, not good enough, I was thinking about this masqueraded real success, that at first we have to know who we are and not to be afraid of it. And then the way you came to this realization, which is absolutely incredible thing. You just let me admire you for the fact that you succeeded in the highest form of human realization. You know who you are and you maximize your abilities because of that. But how many people are deprived because they are even afraid to think who they are? How would you recommend, what would be your first step with asking this question, who I am?
Well, I have a little bit of a hard time with the question, who am I? Because I don't know who I am. I don't even know how to answer that question. And a lot of the times I ask my client, well, who are you? And they don't know how to answer it either. I think what's most importantly is what matters to you? What matters to you? How do you want to be? What's most important to you in terms of the kind of person, the quality of person you want to be? And how can you make yourself into that kind of person? I think that's easier for us than who am I. Best I can say is I'm Marianne Wideline. But I wasn't born with that name, so is that who I really am? Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I'm not sure about the who. But yes. The qualities of myself, yes, those I can understand and those I have power over.
Okay, then perhaps a little bit choice of words, because you just talked about quality, and that perhaps I will refer to. But I'm totally agreeing with you. Your approach somewhat more natural because you're suggesting the process, search, when I am sort of speak a little bit of intimidating with a so direct question, who I am. It can be a little bit paralyzing because of the power of the question. But you're suggesting perhaps a little bit more natural way, what I like, what I want to achieve. Do I make sense to you?
You do, and what I can say is the best way to get the best response from our brains is not to impose difficult questions and difficult structures on ourselves, is to be more friendly, more easygoing. You could say, for example, I wonder who I am. And that allows your brain to kind of shift into curiosity and wonderment mode. And you might get a response to it. I wonder who I am. I still don't know what to do with the question, with the pronoun who. But the less intense you are with your expectations of yourself, the more loving, the more gentle, the more kind, but also persevering, the better you're going to get results, the better results you're going to get from your brain and your heart.
I found
we don't do well with force. We don't do well with force.
That's very true. And just to catch this thought, I found that connection to the abstract art, like music, something which does not require your responsibility to respond, something which just appeals to your emotions in the moment, spontaneity. I think it's a very powerful moments of revelation and truly, truly expansion. And then because you're not aware of it, you're very free to go to the maximum of it. Mm-hmm. I found that music can trigger so many hidden points and be so helpful. And if you find the music which you like and sometimes which you don't, that much you know about yourself. So, but this is very soft, more imaginative way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Can I share with you how I actually help my clients?
Please, by all means.
I think you would appreciate hearing this.
Absolutely.
I mostly work with women, although I can work with men, but I mostly work with women now. I'll tell you why. I believe that the heart and its wisdom must come alive now. The heart of each of us in caring for ourselves, in caring for each other, and in caring for all life. And an awakened heart inspires wisdom, and all is cultivated and well-tended. And women tend the heart. We are the nurturers and protectors of life, and clearly it is time for us to assist humanity into a thriving future. And so when I work with women, I began by helping them to determine their limiting patterns and their cause and the problems that these create. And without exceptions, my clients find the cause to be a negative perception or belief. Usually it's not good enough, as a matter of fact, or betrayal. But when a negative perception is triggered, it becomes like a muscle that suddenly spasms. And attention and energy are immediately diverted to dealing with the resulting problems and consequences. So during client sessions, we don't try to figure out how they can resolve the problems. We identify the negative perception and how to transform it into its positive alternative. So then, as the related sabotaging habits are removed, clients connect more sincerely with themselves and more genuinely with the kind of person that they know themselves to be. So essentially, eliminate the negative perception and the related problems disappear. Then rather than negatively react and cope with the consequences, previously cramped energy is freed up to create the desired life. This cultivates magnificence for women and profoundly changes our perspective, the quality of performance, relationships, and life. And frankly, in this state, nothing can stop us. Possibility becomes reality, and miracles abound.
Well, I think it's extremely important and vital that you indeed channeling your gift and knowledge towards women, because women for last decades being under so much particular stress because they're wearing so many hats during the day. It's almost a luxury now to be just a mother. And therefore, I think your work, and particularly the way you are nurturing this process, is so important. And I wanted to thank you that you are focusing on us women, because not only we certainly need this type of intervention, but also because our challenges are that much increased lately.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And also, what needs to happen is that decision-making at the important levels of our cultures, our societies, our governments, and at all levels, decision-making needs to be with women, with men and women. It's been slanted to mostly men for as long as history tells. And we need both the feminine perspective along with the masculine perspective, so we get a more whole, balanced, and stable perspective that's more nurturing to all life. And so that's really the primarily the reason why I want to support women at this time. And I think humanity needs it at this point, because we're making a lot of mistakes and we're not changing them fast enough at the highest levels.
Needless to say, to stretch a little bit, our conversation, our chat, which is coming to the end, the point of your work is that much more important, as I said, to stretch it out, because women on the different parts of the world are getting such unfair, cruel treatment, and it is that much more important that we are setting the tone and that we are making women with all her potentials, not even to compare, for example, to men, but just to realize all her incredible potentials with all these qualities and all these ideas which you are talking about, certainly, hopefully, will be spread out beyond the borders of United States. And that is, to me particularly, extremely important. And I think people in the world are not aware enough to what extent cruelty is still taking place in a different part of the world. But I think reading your work, having discussion with you, one can sharpen mind, sharpen perception, and start to think about her or his own journey. I cannot thank you enough for being so open, so sincere, and so incredibly generous in expressing yourself as a person or as a professional. You've been absolutely honest. It is the same. That's how I felt, and that's how I'm sure all our listeners felt. I just wanted to ask you at the end if you can kindly say your either website or telephone number, how people can reach you, and also if you can mention the names of your books. And I know that a few of them will come up very soon. So as a conclusion, can you give us information about yourself?
Sure, thank you. I'm on Facebook, and so I can be found there. And second of all, and I'll spell my name, Marianne, M-A-R-I-A-N-N-E, Weidlein, W-E-I-D-L-E-I-N. If your listeners want to ask me to be a Facebook friend, tell me they heard me on your program, and I will gladly friend them, as it's called in Facebook land. My website is empoweringvision.com, one word, empoweringvision.com. And on my website is a course in intentional manifestation that's called It's All Up to Me. And in the courses and articles section, in the courses section of courses and articles, are various different courses that are available, one of which is the first book I ever wrote. It is now online, and is called Empowering Vision for Dreamers, Visionaries, and Other Entrepreneurs. It's a business course manual for the self-employed. That's what I began doing in the mid-80s when I became self-employed. There's a little free course, a year-long course, under the button called Your Accelerator. And then there are also all of the interviews, the radio interviews I'm doing are being listed on my website. And then there's the buttons that let you click on the different work that I do, Renewal for Women, Intentional Transformation, and Cultivating Leadership, and so forth, are on there. So, yes, and also there's a click to my blog, which can also be joined from Facebook, my blog, which is called Manifestation and Renewal. And so it's empoweringvision.com. And send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. And thank you so much.
It was truly a pleasure and honor. I thank you so much for sharing. We will continue our communication with you using our modern facilities. Thank you for giving this information. And on this note, I would say goodbye to my guest, Marianne Weidlein. And I will stay with you on the air for a little bit after this musical interaction, and pleasure. So until a few moments, here's Lena Life continuation with my program, and also with a few thoughts about the world after this music.
Thank you.
like to create a little tradition. Besides having my guests, I like to have a little touch about the world life. And on this note, I have to say that I really feel very empty inside, and I really do, because I didn't have a chance to thank BBS in the beginning and thank them again, because this particularly moment, we are all under a lot of decisions, moments of choice, struggle some, and certainly in a couple of weeks we will have midterm elections. I call it middle life elections, because the term of the president is just about half is gone, and we all have our own opinions. We certainly quite in despair, because it's not a secret that sometimes money sounds more pronounced than human brain, leadership, and some knowledge. But this is life. And as I mentioned several weeks ago, don't exactly remember at which show, that this is a test for the world, where material, practical items with all this beauty and comfort would have to find some peace or better communication with the spiritual, intellectual, and emotional properties. So we're going through this journey. Needless to say how complicated that is. And the fascination I found for myself is that the whole world is going through that, but we also feel the same thing on our own individual rights. So when I said the same thing, I didn't mean that we all feel the same thing. It's we are processing the same issues, but we are considering the result in a different way, in a very individual way. And there is another issue which we will perhaps discuss next time. How much we can afford to be an individual, where it is noble, fantastic bravery, but when it goes to the excesses and we're losing sometimes grounds, which is also part of our human sensational, I would say, quality. But where is this proportion? Where we find our grounds? This is quite a challenge. And the people who are going to be chosen by us as our leaders, hopefully, will have this more mature and perhaps with more self-awareness leadership, with a little bit less of the fear of being wrong or right, but being more tuned to their own ideals. And we are human. All of us have our own ideals. On this note, I'd like to thank BBS, who allowed me again to share these thoughts, to create this wonderful opportunity for all of us to communicate through this BBS air. And also the fact that, again, I never can stop admiring this, that you can call the station and anyone who is available will take your telephone call and make you feel very comfortable, welcome. It is so incredibly beautiful. We love computers. We love our technology. But nothing can substitute BBS. With this note, until next week, that was your Lina Life, and I am Lina Mermont.